So we started discussing the dark energy. And so the first argument why there is dark energy is due to this observation of very old stars in globular clusters. And so if there were no dark energy, no lambda or whatever, then these stars would be actually older than the age of universe. And so that would be, of course, a contradiction. However, more convincing is this argument about the supernova explosions. So here's the cartoon of that. So we have some supernova exploding at chi equal to chi m, and we observe it at chi equal to zero. And so last time we calculated that you observe flux, which is observed energy per area per time, is given by these quantities here. So L is the luminosity of this supernova explosion, and that's a standard candle, something that is known. And then you have the scale factor A at the time of the explosion, and A now, and there's this function which is SK of X is either X or sine HX, depending on what kind of universe we have, and that's evaluated at chi M. So now all we want to do is to just rewrite this flux formula in terms of the redshift Z. So cosmological redshift is related or is defined by this. It's basically Z plus 1 gives you the ratio of the two scale factors. And if you differentiate that relation, we derive the formula that dz is somehow related to dt. So now our work will be to write chi m in terms of the of z. Okay. So chi m as a function of z. And let me just write several trivial identities. So first of all, x is an integral of dx. So chi m of z, I will just change the limits. It's integral from emitted till now d chi. So now we have chi equal to zero. So that's why this is true. So now you have radial photons. So you can relate d chi to d eta. And because the photons are coming at you, so as eta elapses, chi is decreasing. So the minus sign disappears. So emitted till now d eta, because we have radial photons. And then I can use the definition of eta through normal time. So emitted to zero dt a of t. And then finally, I'll use this beautiful formula. So I'll have 1 over a of t dt is dz over a0 over h. So this is given by 1 over a0 from 0 to z dz h of z. And so I drop the minus sign because now I have the other limits. I swap the limits there. Okay, so this is how you express chi emitted in terms of z. So the last thing which you need to know is how the Hubble parameter depends on z. Okay, so and then the statement is that h as a function of z can be written as h now. And then square root of sum over I omega I now 1 plus z 3 1 plus w I, and then square root of this thing here. Okay, so that's the statement that this is what I have to plug in. So what is what? So omega I at time equal to zero are just this ratio of the matter of the due matter component divided by critical density now. So how much? So I am summing here over matter, over radiation, over lambda content and stuff like that. And so this gives me these omega i's. Z is just the redshift factor. And this wi is this p over rho constant thing for each matter component. Okay, so now this is very easy to derive. So basically, you just use the Friedmann's equation. So h squared is 8 pi g over 3 rho. So now it's rho total. Of course, it's the sum over rho I at a given time. And so now you write it in terms of rho 0. Okay, so you know, comes from Friedmann equation, comes from Friedmann equation. So you have h squared is 8 pi g 3 rho total, which is sum over I of rho I. This is at any given instant of time. So now you multiply by rho 0 and divide by rho 0. So I'll divide by rho 0 here, multiply by rho 0 here. So now we know that today this is h 0 square. So this is h 0 square sum over rho I divided by rho 0. And then, so this is at time t. So you can also multiply and divide by rho I at now. Okay, so this thing here, I can just write as rho I at time t, rho I at 0, rho I at 0, and then rho 0. This is precisely what we mean by omega I now. And this thing is given by the solution of the second Friedmann equation of that simple one. So you know that the densities goes like a to minus 3, 1 plus w. And if you plug for a0 and z plus 1, this is what you get. Okay, so there's one line missing. Do it yourself, but you should arrive at this beautiful formula. So now you have all the information. So you have f as a function of, let's say, a0 and then z. Okay, so I can always, you know, replace a0 over a with z plus 1. And I have h of z, and I plug it here. And then I get chi emitted of z, and I plug it here. So this is really f as a function of a0 and z. Okay, so very good. So that's the end of the calculation. And we have the Nobel Prize, almost. So people don't really plot flux. They plot what they actually can see, and that's the magnitude. So instead of flux, people like apparent magnitudes. Magnitudes, and so the magnitude is basically logarithm of flux. So it's minus 2.5 times. So there's only one natural logarithm, the base of e, but anyway, they're using the base of 10, and then of the flux. Okay, so this is the apparent magnitude. And so why is this useful? Is, of course, our eye is a logarithmic device. So actually, if you see something two times brighter, actually the flux is 10 times bigger. Okay, so this is because our eye likes it. Okay, so this is what people do. And so then you can plot this apparent magnitude as predicted by this formula here, as a function of z, setting a0, for example, equal to 1 or whatever. So now you notice that in that formula for h of z, we have the parameters omega I, which is really the matter content now, right? So now what you can what you can do is that you fix these parameters omega I to be equal to something, and then you get a line like that. So this is, you know, one set of omega I's. And then you choose another set of omega I's, and then you get a line like that. And another set of omega I lines, and you get it like that. So that's the theory prediction. So to get the Nobel Prize, you really actually have to do the observation. So we will have to measure what the apparent magnitude of these supernova explosions is. And so one of these will happen to your fit. So some will happen to fit. So let's say this one fits. Okay, so this is the actual observation. And that actual observation can be fitted by this line with some omega i's. Okay, and so fits line of omega matter 0.3 and omega dark energy 0.7. Okay? So this is how actually people really convinced that there is some dark energy, there is this extra component contributing to the density of our universe today. And this is what got the Nobel Prize. Okay? The Nobel Prize. So you see, it's a three-line calculation, well, maybe five-line calculation, and you get a Nobel Prize. And it's not Middle Ages; it's actually a couple of years ago. Okay, so how simple it is to get Nobel Prize. I put some links into the Wikipedia, so now you can actually. So I put a link to this Nobel Prize speech or whatever, so you can read about it. I put links to Weinberg's paper about cosmological constant problems and his explanations about that. I also uploaded this graph of CL as you wanted. Okay, are there any questions to this? So let me very briefly, so cosmological constant problems. And at this point, there are at least three. So the first one we already know. So it's the old one, which is really significant in some sense. So we know that there must be a contribution to the cosmological constant from the vacuum energy. So now what you observe is rho lambda now is 10 to the minus 29 grams per centimeter cube. Or, which is 110 minus 10 to minus 120 in reduced Planck units. However, the fluctuations of vacuum fluctuations. Of course, will be proportional to m Planck square. So now setting Planck units, m Planck square is just 1, so of the order of 1. And we see this 120 things discrepancy. So that's the old problem we already mentioned. There is a new cosmological constant problem. And I encourage you to read about it in that Weinberg's paper. But basically, the question is, okay, so why? So first question, old one, is why is it so small? So why the cosmological constant is so small? And the second question, the new one, is why it's actually basically governing now the universe? Why is the dominant energy density of the universe, why it's actually almost so critical. Okay, so in other words, well, why rho lambda is actually almost rho critical, almost rho today. Okay, so that's another question. Or you can put it in a different way, is that if you plot this logarithm of rho and logarithm of a, and so we had these things on the matter would go with the slope minus 3, and then cosmological constant goes with slope 0, and so why we are actually here, why lambda, why are we already in the lambda-dominated universe, and so on. But that's related to these structure formations and other related problems. So if lambda were bigger, the structure formation wouldn't happen, and so on. But anyway, I encourage you to read that paper by Weinberg.
So what kind of answers will be satisfactory for these kinds of problems? Any?
Well, he of course coins for, well, he pushes for anthropic principle.
Yeah. Is that an answer? Huh? Is that an answer? Selection.
Exactly. but he shows that, you know, the other models which were proposed don't really solve this. So he shows that the other models don't work, and so that's why he pushes for anthropic principle. However, there is also this third quite interesting thing, and because it's it was done at PI, let me also mention that. And so that's sometimes called cosmological non-constant problem. So cosmological non-constant problem. And it's due to our own Elliot Nelson and my Shafsordi. So I encourage you to read their paper and talk to them. So it's archive 1504 00012. So read the paper first and then discuss with these gentlemen here. But what they are basically saying is that people too much worry about the value of these vacuum fluctuations, okay? So vacuum expectation value, so there's this T mu nu of vacuum, and this is something which has to couple. So there is this vacuum expectation value of T mu nu of vacuum fluctuations. And so this is what contributes to the matter density, and it has to appear on the right-hand side of the Einstein equations. And it evolves, you know, it affects the homogeneous universe. Okay. However, in some sense, this is just a choice of, you know, zero value energy. On the other hand, if T mu nu vacuum is really there, then you have also higher order correlation functions. And so the higher order correlators. And so, for example, you should also have T mu nu of X vacuum and T kappa lambda of Y vacuum. And although this doesn't actually affect, you know, what your FRW spacetime is, it affects the fluctuations around it. Affects inhomogeneities, homogeneous universe. Okay, and so then they argue that basically, whereas you can get around this problem by basically tuning the zero energy to be zero, or, you know, doing some great subtraction, so that actually I wouldn't have contribution of lambda, there is no way you can get rid of these things. And actually these things should be fatal for inhomogeneities, for fluctuations of our universe. And so So anyway, I think it's an interesting idea. I don't understand anything they are saying, but as I said, read the paper and talk to them. And they want some prize for this paper as well. So I encourage you to read this. Questions?
Why is it related to non-constant?
Well, it's their terminology. So if I had a constant, well, because it's non-constant, it's really like a fluctuation, vacuum fluctuation. I think that's where it comes from. Ask them. Okay, I don't really know. I don't remember. Anyway, so now let me start the last section of this matter thing, and I'll talk a little bit about inflation. So now it's actually G, inflation. And now I'll just give you the general idea of what the inflation is. So the first thing is to define something which is called commuting Hubble radius. Commuting Hubble radius. And if you want, your expansion or whatever, you have some characteristic radii in FRW spacetime. So one of them is the scale factor A, which describes the radius of the curvature of this spatial slice. And another one is the Hubble constant, or 1 over Hubble constant. So now if you combine the two, you get some ratio which is dimensionless. And that's what is called this commuting Hubble radius. So you define R hat to be 1 over A H. And it's given by this thing here. It has the units, the same units as chi. Okay. So now so there's a dot here. So obviously, if I have accelerating universe, if the universe is accelerating, that means that a double dot is bigger than zero. In other words, a dot is increasing. So if a dot is increasing, r hat decreases. Okay. If you have an accelerated one, it's the other way around. Okay. So that's what will be very interesting and very crucial for our inflation picture. So now, let me give you some hints what this commuting Hubble radius actually means. And it's related to whether the particles, so when we discussed the horizons back in FRW spacetime, we mentioned this particle horizon. So particle horizon was basically the maximum value of chi anything can communicate with us, right? If we had chi, so remember the picture where we had, you know, this was us. And then we had this past light cone. And then chi of particle horizon and then if chi is bigger, so this is chi equal to zero. So now if chi is bigger than chi particles horizon, it could never communicate with us. Okay, so that certainly tells you something about, you know, causality of your FRW spacetime, whatever. So if chi is bigger than pi chi particle horizon, never could have communicated. Okay. So now, this R hat is a little bit more subtle, and it's actually a little bit more useful as well. It actually tells you about whether the things can talk to each other now. Now, meaning, you know, in nearby time, in nearby Hubble time. Okay, so if G whether they can actually talk to each other. So consider some distance delta L, which will be distance light can travel in a Hubble time. Okay, so light moves in this at the speed of light. So c times the Hubble time. Hubble time is just 1 over h. Okay, so this is c over h. And of course, the time is just a times chi times c or whatever. Okay, so a times chi is the time, and then c is the speed of light. Okay, so let's say I travel delta chi. So now let me denote that delta chi by this r hat. And so we are getting a formula what this r hat has to be. So this r hat is just c, well, c is gone, so 1 over ah. Okay, so it's precisely the definition which I used over here. So in other words, it tells you how much of the co-moving coordinate I can travel, the light can travel within the Hubble time. Okay. And so here comes the usefulness of this r hat. So we know that if chi is bigger than chi particle horizon, they could never have communicated. On the other hand, if chi is bigger than r hat, that means they cannot talk to each other now. Observers cannot talk to each other other now, meaning within th. Okay, so that's the meaning of this co-moving Hubble radius. Is this clear? Does it make sense? Okay. So now if you want a definition of inflation, so inflation so inflation postulates that before the era of radiation, before the hot Big Bang, there was an era of time when actually universe expanded like crazy. So inflation is the idea that before radiation era started, there was a period when universe expanded and now very precise term expanded like crazy. Okay, so what I mean by that the expansion was of course accelerating expansion. So a double dot is bigger than zero. So this is precise definition of inflation. Okay, so there was this epoch in the early universe when this happened, and that's the assumption. That's what inflation is. Okay, so now because a double dot, we have accelerated expansion. So r hat is decreasing. So dr hat over dt is actually smaller than zero, and that's just a double dot is bigger than zero. Okay, so this would be just that we had accelerated expansion, but we want to have accelerated expansion, well, expansion like crazy. Okay, so we want to have actually, this is much, much bigger than, much, much smaller than zero. And to achieve that, you want anything than any polynomial expanding. So you want exponential expansion. So during inflation, the common wing Hubble radius exponentially decreases and so you define n to be number of e folds and simply defined by e to the n is whatever was the initial Hubble radius to whatever it was the final. So this is the initial one before the inflation started. And this is the final one. And so because the Hubble the commoving Hubble radius is decreasing, then I can define this to be e to the n. Okay, a picture. So we can return back to k equal to plus one universe or whatever, so where I can draw it. So I have the sphere here. And as always, we are here. Well, not really in those times, but so we are there. So this is k equal to plus one. Embedding, if you want. And so the statement is that before the inflation started, we had the radius Ri. So this would be Ri hat. And then as the inflation proceeds, this homing Hubble radius drastically decreases. And so at the end of the inflation, you'll have R hat F. Okay, so the inflation basically does for you this thing, is that the commoving Hubble radius decreases like crazy, exponentially crazy. Okay, and so this is an accelerated expansion, but after the inflation actually finished, then we have normal hot Big Bang, we have normal matter, we have radiation and matter and other things. And so then the universe is actually decelerating. Is that matter content the universe is decelerating? So that's why the Hubble radius actually starts increasing again. So during inflation, it shrank. But now, so this is the inflation. It goes from large to small. But then normal matter actually increases the Hubble radius. And so this will be R hat today. Yes.
How does this help with the curvature problem?
We will see. I'll just talk about it. So now basically the statement is very approximately, if R hat today is still smaller than what it was initially before the inflation started, then we can solve all the puzzles we have. So if zero hat is still smaller than our initial, then can resolve all problems. All, and I will mention three. you already know two of them, so all three puzzles, which actually sort of motivated inflation in the first place. And so this will happen if actually this number of e-folds is sufficiently large. And so n will have to be something like 50. And so you are saying that actually you expanded that universe in that very, very short period of time during the inflation. You expanded the universe e to the 50 times or something like that. Questions? So now this is all there is to inflation. And you see immediately that this is not really a theory. It's just an assumption. It's a framework for what I need to achieve so that I solve some puzzles. Okay, and then the way how you achieve that depends on the actual theory of inflation which you present. But inflation itself, the idea itself, is just a framework. Okay, so now let me mention these three puzzles. And as I said, you already know two of them. One of them is, of course, the flatness problem, and the other one is this communication problem of the radiation there and variation there. So we have this horizon problem. And you already plotted that picture in your tutorial. So it's very simple. So the first puzzle was, yeah, if I have only the accelerated universe, this is us. And this is CMB, eta CMB, eta us. And then eta 0 would be here. And then the statement was why this region is the same as that region, why physics is correlated there and there. In fact, you would have 10 to the 4 disconnected pieces now, all of them of the size of the moon. And the statement inflation is doing for you is that if there was an era, so this was the era of the decelerated universe in some sense, and if you have the era of an accelerated one, it actually buys you extra negative conformal time, and you can extend this thing here, and here, and here, and there, and there's a plenty time of communication. So communication possible. And so actually the things could exchange the information, and that's why this guy is correlated with that guy. So that's the idea. Of course, you can see the same thing on that picture, because the Komu-Weng-Hubble radius tells you, you know, what is in causal contact at the moment. You see that the whole globe almost was in causal contact before the inflation started, because R I hat is, you know, covering a lot of the ball. But so now we are observing something much, much smaller, and then we are surprised why the things coming from here and coming from there are correlated. But of course, they are correlated because in the past they were in contact, in causal contact, because this Ri hat was much, much bigger than R0 hat. Okay, so that's an equal explanation of this. So this was simple. The second one is the flatness problem. And so you might be thinking is that what we observe today is that rho is rho critical, 1 plus minus 0.01. And so this may seem as very, very fine tuning. Fine tuning of the density of the universe to be exactly the critical one. And of course, if it were the critical, we would have k equal to 0. So we are on the verge of going k minus 1, k plus 1, or k 0. But why is it so fine-tuned to 1? So now let me show you that this actually is much worse than you think. So if you use the Friedmann's equation, and behold, there is a new M Planck square. So a small M Planck square, 8 pi over M Planck square with capital M. And then minus k over a square. So this is my Friedmann equation. And at the same time, you know that the rho critical is just without the k. So it's 4k equal to 0. So 3 m Planck square and then a square. So now if you write down the fraction of rho and rho critical, okay, then you will have the term. The only thing is that minus k over a square, but now I'll divide it by a square. So I'll have k over a square, a square, which is precisely r hat square. So actually, this is written as 1 plus k r hat square in terms of this Kolmogorov radius. So just, you know, plugging one equation to the other, dividing the two, you are getting this thing. So now, if the universe is decelerating all the time, as we know after the Big Bang it would be if there was no inflation, then actually our head is increasing. This is what we concluded over there. Okay. So in other words, if you go back in time, our head would be much, much smaller than it is now. So as we go back in time, our hat much smaller. Of course, it's just that picture there, right? Much smaller than our hat now. But if you look at this equation is precisely this, right? I have rho over rho critical is 1 plus minus r hat square. Okay, so that equation is that equation. So in other words, if actually r hat is decreasing as you go backwards in time, this 0.01 had to be much smaller as you go backwards in time, because this is r hat square. Okay. And in fact, what you can show is that rho over rho critical at Big Bang nucleosynthesis is actually 1 plus minus 10 to minus 31. So if this didn't look like fine tuning, this certainly does. Okay, so it seems like as you go backwards in time, actually you had to be even much, much closer to the rho critical than you are now. So either you really, there is some reason why you had to be so close to rho critical, or, you know, what's going on. So can I actually avoid fine tuning? And of course, the picture here is again the solution to this problem. So yeah, so before after the inflation actually finished, we were at that r hat f, which is really, really small, and that's why we have this thing here. But if before there was an era of inflation, then actually the actual r hat was much, much bigger than that, ri hat. And so you could have started with, let's say, 2 times rho critical, or something, you know, very, very different from rho critical, if the inflation is there. So in other words, inflation removes this very, very fine tuning. Inflation removes fine tuning because this ri hat actually could have been much, much bigger than this thing here. Does it make sense? maybe. Everybody sleeping, everybody tired. Should we finish the lecture and go for pancakes? Okay, so that's the second problem. So really, you know, inflation is designed so that it resolves this fine-tuning problem. It also tells you that, yeah, there was some communication possible. Finally, if you are a friend of gut theory, there was this third problem, which was especially relevant back in, I don't know, 70s or 80s. People were obsessed with gut theories. So, monopole problem. So this is only a problem for friends of gut theories. If you don't believe in gut theories, then of course this is not a problem for you. Friends of grand unified theories. And so if you go back again, if there is no inflation and you go back further, you know, to the early universe, then you get to the point where the universe is so hot that actually the temperature is at the gut scale. So shortly after Big Bang, the temperature could be of the order of T gut, which is typical place like T 10 to the 16 GeV. So remember the Planck scale is 10 to the 19 GeV, so this is three orders of magnitudes lower, but still, you know, huge energies, 10 to the 16 GeVs. And then there may be some symmetry breakings occurring or whatever, and you may start forming various defects. So you may start forming cosmic strings, but you may also start forming monopoles. Okay, so symmetry breaking. Would produce approximately one monopole. One monopole per one vacuum, and by vacuum I mean causally connected region here, okay, which is one monopole per causally connected region. And of course that causally connected region is related to this R hat. Okay, so let's estimate you know, the density of monopoles then and the density of monopoles now. So when produced,
what do you mean by monopole?
Something highly energetic, something a topological defect. So we can think about a magnetic monopole or something like that, for example. Okay, so when produced, the distance, the physical distance between the monopoles would go like A times the causally connected region, which is, well, delta chi, which is R hat, which is like 1 over h at that time. But we know that you can again estimate what this h was according to the temperature through the Friedmann's equation, So you know that the Friedmann equation, again, is the density on the right-hand side, a density, because everything is relativistic. It's energy density. It goes like t to the 4. So t to the 4 of gut. And there's also G Newton, which is M Planck square. Okay. So this is how you estimate what that H was. And so we would have, this is 1 over h. So the distance between the monopoles would be going like m Planck over t square gut. Okay. So this is how apart the monopoles would be. So now, of course, we are not interested what happened then. We are interested what we see now. So d. Now, so everything just gets redshifted. So now everything cooled down from this T-gut crazy temperatures to 3 CMB 3 Kelvin. And so D now is just redshifted. D then, so T-gut over T CMB now. And D of produced, which is M Planck T-gut T CMB. And then if you plug temperature of gut, T 10 to the 16 GeV, T of CMB today, and then M Planck, you get that this is like 10 to the 4 kilometers. So every 10,000 kilometers, you should meet a monopole. Okay, as you travel through the universe, this is that. And if you are interested in the density of these things, is of course, let's say the monopoles actually have the mass, the m-gut, which is the t-gut, which is t to the 16. And then, so it's the mass per volume, d3 now. And if you calculate this number, then you find 10 to the 17 row critical. So just the monopoles themselves would actually produce energy density, which is 10 to the 17 times bigger than what we observed, and 10 to the 17 times bigger than the critical density. So if the density in the universe was so big, of course the universe would be closed to universe, and of course it would collapse long time ago. Okay? The universe would collapse a long time ago. It would be a closed universe, and this would happen. So of course, this was a small trouble with these gut theories and with the monopoles. But you immediately see the solution again from the picture. So here I was using that we produced one monopole per one causally connected region, not assuming the inflation. So we were producing one monopole in this region, another monopole in the same size region, say here, or whatever. So it's just according to this R hat at the end of inflation. However, if the inflation was there, actually all this region was connected. And so you would produce one monopole per one this big region. Okay, so you really dilute the number of monopoles you produce, and that's why actually the universe wouldn't collapse. So actually, if you are a friend of gut theories, it's still possible. So inflation dilutes monopoles. Does it make sense? Everybody happy with the explanation? Questions?
What about predictions of inflation?
What about predictions of inflation? Well, okay. So these are the three original reasons why people started considering inflation. And they all basically are about the homogeneous universe, if you want. But today, people believe in inflation for a different reason. Basically, it gives the right initial conditions for fluctuations. And we will discuss that next week. I'll tell you a fairy tale about why people think inflation is good to produce, you know, at producing good initial data for evolution of our universe. And so that's much more convincing argument, much more convincing argument than just these three puzzles, the original three puzzles. So to conclude today, let me just introduce two parameters which describe inflation. And they sort of tell you about two conditions you have to impose. So two conditions. So one of them is that we have to have rapidly shrinking Hubble radius. So rapidly shrinking Hubble radius. So if you calculate what dr hat over dt is, well, r hat is 1 over a times h. And now there's horrible differentiation of two terms in the denominator. And then this becomes a dot times a h plus a h dot divided by a square h square, which is two terms. And you can write it as minus 1 over a, 1 minus epsilon, where you define epsilon to be minus h dot divided by h square. Okay, so the first term is just the minus 1 over a times 1, and the second term is just this minus epsilon. So now what you want is that this is much, much smaller than 0. And if this is much, much smaller than 0, then this epsilon, so epsilon is typically considered positive, but this epsilon is positive, so I want to make it as small as possible. So I basically want to make it 0. Okay? So epsilon much, much smaller than 1. Okay, so that's the first condition. I have rapidly shrinking Hubble radius. Second condition is that the inflation lasts sufficiently long. So I need to be actually maintain this inflation period for 50 e-folds or for something like that. And so you introduce another parameter, eta. It's not the conformal time. And so this is the rate of change of this parameter in time. And then you have the Hubble time. And you form the following ratio. So this is the th. And this thing is how epsilon is changing in time, the relative change in time. And so if this is to be sufficiently long, actually eta in the absolute value has to be much smaller than 1. OK. And so these are the two conditions. So you have to have shrinking Hubble radius, and you have to have sufficiently long inflation. OK, I have still time. Can I have 4 more minutes or something like that? So very good. So now you may be asking, what kind of matter actually drives inflation? And so we know that in variation-dominated era, we behave in certain way. We know that in matter-dominated era, we behave certain way. What is the equation of state? So now the question is, what is the equation of state has to be during inflation so that I satisfy the requirements imposed on inflation? And the answer is interesting. Not really. So what kind of fluid, what kind of matter drives inflation? Okay, so again, I'll write my two Friedmann's equations, rho over 3 m Planck square, and the other one is rho dot is minus 3h rho plus p. These are my two Friedmann's equations. Now I differentiate. So these are not really the Einstein equations. I told you they only have one derivative in them. Of course, the Einstein equations are second-order equations. So actually, if you did write the Einstein equations, you would have two derivatives. So now, starting with these equations, let's return back to the Einstein equation. And you get it by differentiating the first one here. So if I differentiate the first one by time, I get 2h a dot is rho dot 3 m Planck square. Now I use the second one to express what rho dot is. So this is minus 3h rho plus p divided by 3 m Planck square. On the other hand, I can write what the left-hand side is. So this is equal to 2h times h dot. But h dot is, so h is a dot over a. If you differentiate it again, you get a double dot over a minus a dot square a square. So this is h dot. And then this guy, a dot over a square, is just h square. So I can use for h square, again, the first Friedmann equation. You write it in terms of the density. OK, so this is equal to 2h, and then a double dot over a minus rho over 3. M Planck square. So now you look at this expression here and this expression here. So h cancels, and then you can collect terms which have rho and collect terms which have p, and then you have a double dot as well. So by simply rearranging this equals to that, you find that a double dot over a is equal to minus 1 over 6 m Planck square rho plus 3p. And in fact, this is the acceleration equation which you would get from the Einstein equations if you actually did write it. So this is the acceleration equation. One of the Einstein equations. OK, so now it's obvious that if I want to have inflation, so a double dot is bigger than 0, I want to have accelerated expansion. So inflation has a double dot bigger than 0. So I'll have to have rho plus 3p bigger than 0. Is a minus. Smaller than 0. In other words, this parameter w, which is p over rho, actually is smaller than 1 over 3. So this is the equation of state for the matter driving inflation. So just a warning, this thing actually violates strong energy condition in general relativity. Okay, violates strong energy condition. Energy conditions in general relativity are basically sanity assumptions imposed on matter, so that matter actually satisfies some reasonable things, like maybe the energy density of the matter is positive and, you know, propagates at a speed slower than the speed of light and stuff like that. So these are reasonable assumptions based on, imposed on matter. But it's actually not a big deal if some of these conditions are violated. Okay, so for example, if you have Hawking evaporation, that violates null energy condition, and everybody is happy with that. So typically, quantum matter violates some of these energy conditions. So it's not a big deal that the matter requiring inflation, actually imposing inflation, would violate a strong energy condition.
The cosmological constant
have
W because minus 1.
Yeah, it's minus 1. Exactly. So it also violates everything. Okay, so let me stop here and let me continue tomorrow.